Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Community Matters show on Blog Talk Radio, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse and Los Angeles Community Policing. This is our News of the Week show, which we do every week on Sunday night, and we use as the topics for the show the articles that have appeared on the two websites that I just mentioned, LACP.org and NASCA.org, NAASCA.org, each day. What we do is we compile, we make up two pages, one page each for each website, and compile all those articles that we have collected during the week. And so we have one single News of the Week page for each of the two articles. The way to find the articles is simple enough. You go to the front page of either website, again, LACP.org for Los Angeles Community Policing, or NASCA.org, NAASCA.org, for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And you'll find a microphone picture near the top of each page. And next to that microphone picture is the word tonight. And it announces the topic for tonight's show as being Community Matters, the News of the Week from. And it says LACP.org. Click that once, and the correct page from LACP will open in a separate tab. Then it says, and NASCA.org. Click that once. The correct page will open up in a separate tab. These are the two pages, then, that the panel and I will go through, and anyone who calls in can participate, too. We'll go up and down either of the pages. First, we'll tell you which page we're going off of, then how far down the page the article appears, and then finally, the locale and the actual headline of the article before we start talking about any of the topics. This is a community participation show. As I mentioned, we have our chat room open, of course, and you can join us in there. But even better, we'd love for you to call in and just participate by giving us your opinion on these topics. We don't know exactly what we're going to be talking about, but you can actually help us select how the show and just design how the show goes. 646-595-2118 is our phone number, 646-595-2118. And push it an additional number one if you want to join us on the air, and I'll bring you right on. I have a panel of people who are with me tonight who are going to help me do tonight's show. And the first one I'll introduce is the gal who is most responsible for the procurement of these articles and giving them to us, because she does the research every morning, 7 days a week, that she forwards to me, which become the news of the day. MJ Goings is a registered nurse in rural Ohio, where she's also the shift supervisor at the county hospital on the overnight shift. When she completes her shift work overnight and she comes home, instead of going to bed right away for the day, she gets on the computer and produces, by doing research, the articles that she then forwards to me before she does go to bed. And that's one of the ways that she participates. She's also obviously a volunteer on a panel two or three times a week as well, and we're always delighted to have her with us. MJ, thanks for being here tonight.
Hello, hello, hello. You're very welcome. Hi, everyone.
Okay, and next up is Carol Levine. Carol Levine is the co-host for our Monday to Friday shows, and sometimes hosts the shows herself. She is the author of Panic Child, the harrowing true story of sexual abuse and neglect, which is an autobiographical book that she wrote some time ago. It tells how she was abused in her childhood, how it affected her in her adulthood, and how over 30 years ago now she got into recovery through, in her case, a prayer group with a local church. Carol's very active in the community in Northwest New Jersey where she lives, and over into Northeast Pennsylvania just across the Delaware River. And she's, of course, as I say, one of our most dedicated volunteers here at NASCA too. She's on the radio basically every show we have, barring sickness, and we are delighted to have her again tonight. Carol, thanks for being here tonight.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Bill. Hello, MJ.
Hello.
All right, ladies, and we have one other person here, and that's Ken Hurd. And so we have an extra male voice besides mine. Ken is from Ontario, Canada. He originally was from Toronto, but now he lives down in the Hamilton area, London, Ontario area. And he calls in regularly, too. He's a volunteer that's been with us a short time now, and he's getting better and better at offering and participating on the shows. Ken is someone who was abused years ago, and now is on his own road of recovery, and he's representative of, as I say, Canada too. So sometimes the things are slightly different from that perspective. Not really a lot. We are a North American and English speaking, frankly, organization. And Ken Hurd, you're always welcome to be on the show. Thank you very much for being here tonight.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Bill, for the invitation to join you. And hi, everybody.
Hey.
Hi. Nice to have you again.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Before we get going, and I will go to MJ first, as I usually do, I just want to remind people, this is a community participation show. And we really would like you to call in. We know there are people listening on every night that don't call in, which is okay. But it does help us a great deal to even know what's on your mind if you call in and express that. And it might even, you know, help us direct the show, which, you know, design which way the show is going to go in the future. So without further ado, though, and the number again is 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. And you're hearing a little bit of moving around or something on one of the mics. You just be aware of that. Okay, MJ, why don't you pick out an article for us, since you procured them all at one point. You must have some favorites.
Yeah. Before I go to the article, though, I want to say something. I'm quite pleased with you and Carol are aware of the fact. This last quarter, I have been serving on the grand jury here in my county, and it already had our session for the month of July, and then I received special notice in the mail that I had to go again. I didn't know what it was, you know. I figured it had to be something pretty big. Well, the day before I go into the grand jury, there's an article in the front page of the newspaper, our local newspaper, and we only get our local paper once a week, you know. So, but it was about a 33-year-old cold case, a homicide, that was going to be televised on Cold Justice. Just this past Friday night. Of course, I go to the session of the grand jury, and here it is. That was the case they were bringing up. After 33 years, the murder of a woman here locally, and we indicted the ex-husband, and he's going to trial after 33 years. So I was quite pleased.
Right.
So anybody that watched Cold Justice Friday night, that's where I live.
Actually, it's going to reappear through the week on occasion, because they repeat the same show on the week that it starts. And it's the host show is about Paulding, Ohio, which is where MJ's from, and you can get a really good idea of the topography and so forth, and also this lifestyle that they have in Paulding. It's a very small, quiet, rural community, and it doesn't have any homicides. This is the first homicide that it ever had, I think the sheriff said. So
there was There were actually three cold cases. Yeah, three that he presented to Cold Justice. This just happens to be the one they picked. Mm-hmm. But you can also watch it online. It'll be available probably in a week or 2 weeks or something like that. But, I was very well pleased with the way they presented the show, the way they presented the towns that were represented. I don't know if anybody's familiar with Cold Justice, but they don't go into the large cities.
What the heck is going on?
It's Ken's mic. I'll tell him in a second. Go ahead, MJ.
This is a former prosecutor, a forensics expert, and a homicide investigator. What they do is to go into small towns that can't afford to have the high-priced investigations done. And they go in and offer their time and services, and it's quite a good show. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, it's the show people will recognize by us telling them that it has the two ladies who do this investigating together, and they go around the country. Now, in Paulding, for example, they didn't have any expertise either because they never really had to handle this kind of case before. So they really appreciated the women bringing in there. Now, I just need to tell Ken before we get going here. Ken, you're making noise on your microphone somehow. We don't know if it's breathing noise or something like that. I have it off right now, but I'm going to turn it back on. But every time I do turn it on, we're hearing it. So here we go.
It's probably my fan.
Could be, but we can't have it. So if you could turn the fan.
How are we
better,
now?
Whatever you just did.
I just turned the fan away.
Great. Thank you very much, Ken.
It's so 90-something here today.
That's news from Pawnee, Ohio.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as articles, if we want to get started, there are actually three articles on the NASCA site that are related. Two are together right beyond, just a little over halfway down the page. And the third one is seven from the bottom. So they're all talking about the way our internet companies are picking up child pornographers, possession of pornography and distribution. Oh, excuse me, the first one down near the bottom is talking about a case that happened a month ago where Google turned somebody in. They're defending their stance. The two in the middle, one is Microsoft picking up a guy in Pennsylvania. And then the third one right below that is telling how the companies are catching people that are using their services for possession and distribution of child pornography. A word to the wise out there, we have said time and time again for all the years we've been on the air, nothing you do online is private. Wise up, people. You're going to get caught. Thank goodness they're catching these people that are doing this. It's not just Google and it's not just Microsoft. You know, it's Twitter. It's Facebook. They are all doing this. So I'm glad for it. I think it's a wonderful thing. How many times have I said I know very well that I've been looked at? You cannot for 12 years, you can't be going online every single day of those 12 years and looking for things on abuse, you know. You can't be going into the government websites every single day for 12 years and not stand out as somebody that better be checked into. But I don't care because I don't have anything they can find. I'm not doing anything wrong. So, you know, people that are out there using the internet thinking it's their own little private playground.
Well,
they consider
true.
You a terrorist.
I know.
Go ahead. Yeah. Sorry, Carol. Go ahead. I had to keep resist, please.
No, I know. Well, you know, what do they think of all of us? I mean, we're on the, you know, online all the time looking for abuse and, you know, the stories of abuse and all that stuff, and so that we can report about it. And so I'm sure that we've all been looked at. I don't really care either. I could care less because I haven't done anything wrong. Yeah. But, you know, people don't realize this. They go on, they put all their personal business. I might put little things here and there, that, but nothing so personal that I wouldn't want anyone else to read. You know, people are just dumb that way. They don't get it. And many times, so, you know, they've been told, you know, not to do that. And I might have little wars with someone over political things. I don't care. But, you know, this, everything is seen. It is. That's just the way it is. So people.
Well, it doesn't bother me. They can look at my stuff. You know, actually, I want to be found and known. You know, I mean, this is what this is my point is. I don't want to be hiding. You know, because of our advocacy. You know,
right.
I don't want it to be ever hard for somebody to find us or know who we are and what we stand for, and certainly at least myself. I, of course, respect anybody else's desire to stay, you know, more in the background, obviously. But as far as, you know, that the priests that I was dealing with said, well, we wanted to make sure that your anonymity could be maintained. There's nothing more that I want than be as public as possible.
Absolutely.
I don't want people to go through what I went through.
That's right. And that's how I feel too, Bill. I'm proud of what we do. And so they can look at me all they want. Yeah,
right.
That's just the way it is.
You know, people say it's an invasion of privacy. I feel about this the same as I feel about DNA. Hey,
mm-hmm.
I don't care if I'm arrested for something. They check my DNA, I don't care. You know? They can check my computer. If you're not doing anything wrong and you keep your nose clean, don't worry about it.
That's right.
Yep.
I mean, looking up articles about for what we do, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
And that's the way I see it. No, of course not. So, see, now I'm having a lot of trouble with my computer. That's why I'm actually a little quieter than usual. I don't know why this happens, but every once in a while I get a bouncy screen. All of the articles, even using the mouse, are bouncing. They're moving, and it's like I have a ghost inside of my computer.
Mm.
So, I don't understand it. I really don't.
Try clicking your mouse outside the document on the screen somewhere else, and it might stop. It might stop bouncing.
All I'm getting is a circle.
Yeah, it's a circle, exactly. I know what you... And a little arrow in the circle. Go outside the page that you're on and click on the desktop somewhere, and then come back to the page, and it'll stop bouncing.
I sure as heck hope so. Because
it's because
getting,
you're holding it.
You better be right.
What?
Yeah. What?
You'd better be right.
It happens to me, and I fix it that way. That's how I fix it. And I know what I'm doing is I'm holding the mouse button down as I scroll the page, and that actually gives a command to the mouse to do a different operation. So instead of don't hold the mouse down when you turn the page. When you move the page, maybe grab the thing on the side, the bar, and slide it up and down. That's a good way to do it. But anyway, when it's bouncing like that, go outside the page, click on the desktop outside the page, and then come back, and the page should have stopped moving.
Let me see, because I changed mouses. I did everything trying to figure out what the heck to do. No, it's just not working. I don't understand it. But I did read article number one. Let me get that out of the way, and then I'll work with this. This is really very annoying. Okay. There had been a, this is on the NASCA site, and it's article number one. There had been a 6-year-old girl. We've been following this actually all week, well, I guess almost all week long, that went missing. The parents didn't actually talk about her missing until the following day, many hours later, which to me seemed very, very odd. She was from a trailer park. I may have mentioned this during the week. Well, they have found the body of this little girl, and as it turns out, a 17-year-old boy had killed her, okay? And he's being held in second-degree murder, and also first degree manslaughter and rape. And the father of this little girl, some years ago, was in trouble for molestation of an 8-year-old and also of a 15-year-old. But for some reason, they dropped the charges. They did, especially on the 15-year-old. And it was just like almost like a misdemeanor or something. I don't quite understand why that would happen. But the very sad part of this is that the little girl has been found dead, which I fear she would be. She was missing too long. This happened last week. This happened last Saturday. Why the parents were so negligent. In one of the articles last week that I read about it, it said, oh, first of all, it was fenced in, a fenced in trailer park, and many times she roamed. This kid's 6 years old. Okay? And so she had gone to bed, and they realized that she wasn't in bed, but they didn't care because she was probably out roaming, I suppose, they thought, around the trailer park. Well, when you have a 6-year-old child, you don't suppose. You look, and you certainly report more quickly. And so, yes, she was found. They had the canine dogs out. They had the dogs out, and they found her. And the boy is 17 years old that had murdered and raped her. And he is, of course, being charged. So that's the end of that. Yeah, very sad.
Yeah, I had to wonder why the children were even in the home.
I don't know.
You know, with the father already having been convicted.
I don't know. But I think that was it was very sad because I think I had even mentioned this last Tuesday, this article. But at the time, she was still missing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what happens. People out there, you have to cut it out. You absolutely have to cut it out. You know, you have to take better care of your children. And then I'm going to go to one more because I'm going to turn this off, reboot it. I'm really having too much trouble with this. One thing that I've been mentioning, oh, my God, for months now. During the summer months, okay, and I don't know what article that would be, but there are a lot of problems with children getting beaten and a lot more physical. All the abuses go up in the summertime, but especially with physical abuse, okay. And so there is an article on here, and it speaks about when kids go back to school, the teachers will see more bruising if the bruising is happening, say, like in your legs and they're wearing shorts, you know, like the long shorts, if they're getting hit in the head, that you won't see. Of course, if there's any facial bruising and bruising of the arms or if children have to wear long sleeves to cover the bruises because of the bruising that's happening. So there it is. I don't know which article it is, MJ, because this thing bounced too much for me. It's not working. Maybe you could help me with that. Which article is that? I'm going to try this.
I don't understand. Before we leave this, I don't understand if the father had something to do with helping the 17-year-old or what. It's a little confusing to me.
Well,
I understand a 17-year-old was arrested, and then late in the article, they mentioned that the father has a abuse, sexual assault background. But what does that have to do with the 17-year-old?
I don't know that it was just something they threw in there. But it does, yeah, I did read where there was no sign that the little girl was abducted from her bedroom. It looks like she left on her own. So I don't know that the two are related at all.
I don't think that the two are related, Bill, at all. I think it's just giving you a little info about the father. And so that when they realized that she was out of her bedroom and you know, off her bed, they didn't seem to think that that meant anything, you know, because she was the type of little kid that would roam around the complex, you know, where they were all parked, these trailer homes or mobile homes, whatever you want to call them. And it was supposedly fenced in. Well, that's not security enough in my brain, you know, because if your child's not in bed, that's a bad thing. You go find your child. So they didn't report it right away. And in fact, until I think it was almost the evening of that day, you know, the next day, she was the day that she was missing. So No, that's not good. And as far as the father's concerned, I think that was just some information that they put in there.
Yeah, but I don't know where it belongs in there. Why are they doing that?
Maybe, may I suggest something?
Sure.
Intergenerational abuse teaches children how to be molesters.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's there.
It has nothing to do with it. They don't even say that the boy knew the father.
No.
There's no relationship established in the article, the way it's written.
I'm sorry.
It's a separate case.
Oh, it's Janice Wright's father. Okay, I'm sorry. I beg
your pardon. It's the kid's father who at one time had a molestation background 15 years ago. Or 14 years ago, 2000 and 2001.
Yeah.
And they bring this up as part of this case that the 17-year-old boy was 3 years old back then, and there's nothing in the article that says anything about there being a relationship between the 17-year-old and the family. And by the way, to tell this family assumed, and there was an assumption, that she was at a neighbor's, trailer. These are close together trailer homes, I guess, but... Of course, they were wrong in doing that, but that was what I can see how it could happen, but I would never do it, but I can see how it could happen. Anyway, I don't understand why they put the father's the whole last part of the article in there. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's almost like they're setting everybody up for that little element of maybe he did,
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't find that article, Carol. I'm looking at it. I know I read it.
Well, I'm working on my computer, so you guys keep talking. I think I can fix this. I'm pretty good with this stuff.
I want to go back to the articles that you brought up, MJ, because I don't think we covered them enough. And I just want to to discuss a little bit about what it is that they found was picture files. Is that what they found? Or, it's pornography that they found, right?
Yes.
Child porn.
Yeah. That's true in the first two cases anyway. Was it true in the bottom case, Ken, too? The one near the bottom of the page?
I can't remember.
Yes.
Okay. It is in the first two. So it's all... So they have some method of tracking these now. I've actually been told about this, but I don't understand it. But there's a way for them to know the difference between a regular JPEG, for example, and a JPEG that features exploited children or naked children or something. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. If you go to that second article just a little over halfway, and it's titled How Tech Companies Are Catching Wrongdoers.
Yes.
Let's see. It kind of said in there it's a photo DNA. Yeah, photo DNA. It's a photo analysis service called Photo DNA, and it developed by Microsoft. The image matching technology attaches a unique number or hashing string to images identified by peak child abuse prevention groups and recognizes matches when uploaded and shared by users, regardless of whether they've been modified or resized. Groups such as the U.S.'s Internet Watch Foundation and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children have flagged almost 100 million images and videos. So they have a database of over 100 million things that they're looking for, and if you fall into, one of those pictures, if you're sending something, they can get you.
Yeah, no, I get it now. Because so you're any of that 100 million pictures mixed in with any of your pornography collection will help them find your pornography collection.
And the way they've done it, it doesn't have to be the entire complete original picture. It can be any part of that picture. If it's been modified, they can still get you.
Right.
A lot of pictures.
By the way,
I was told about this. some time ago, and I was told not to talk about it yet, because it was supposedly a secret. They had this new technology that was coming, and as soon as it broke, I was supposed to be told, and then we would have a special guest that was going to tell us about it. Anyway, this has to be it. It's exactly what the person was talking about, and it's brand new. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, that same technology is also used to scan for illegal use of photographs that are copyrighted.
Uh-huh.
I happen to know that because I found out the hard
way.
Welcome. Yeah.
Sorry about that. It works all of a sudden. Shut up.
I simply uploaded a really nice picture and put it into my collection of photographs that I like. And they asked me where I got it and blah, blah, blah. So I had to take it out.
Wow.
That's happened once with me. One time. And I had to replace something on the site. But I have to be honest, an awful lot of stuff on our site, I didn't create it. You know, it's taken from somewhere or it's offered to me by somebody. Usually, I don't know where the source is.
You'd think that anything that's in the public domain would be, you know, fair game.
Well, you know, even the articles, many of the articles at the bottom say this may not be reproduced, copied, reprinted, what else. That's why we always include the credit for where the article came from. Every one of those links, you can go back to the article. We're not taking credit for any of it. But, that warning is many of the articles, and I always forget about that.
No, I was pursued by Getty Images, which is one of the companies, and I went back and forth with them a couple of times, and then I finally just removed the one picture they had a problem with, and so, okay, I replaced it and didn't say anything to anybody.
But we're not unique.
So, no.
I think every site online, you could probably say the same thing.
Well, yeah, and like it seems that the whole notion of social media is to exchange information and whatever kind of stuff we want to share with each other and so on. So what's the harm in downloading something that's beautiful that you just want to keep? This happens to be a still life of a lake and a bunch of stuff going by, boats and whatever.
Right. It's
not salacious.
It's a picture of a sad looking kid, right? Which we have lots of them, all different kinds of it, all over the state. And it was one of them. But I can understand why they. You know, why they contacted me. They want to be paid for it. They said, you know, for $1,800, I could have worldwide rights into perpetuity. They wanted $1,800. You know, I get it. Yeah. But I said, that's okay. It's not worth that to me. I'll just change it for another picture. Jeez. So.
Write them a bad day, huh?
Yeah. All right. I wanted to go back to this because I wanted to be clear on whether or not this is exactly what I was told, this DNA kind of thing of the photograph. They put it on there when they find it, and then it never leaves. And so anytime that photograph gets shared, you can't get rid of it. And it identifies the picture, and then it ends up mixed in with your collection. And even if some of your collection is new stuff, they'll find you, is the point.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, I've got it back. I fixed it.
Good.
I tried to say anything, it'll go away. I don't know. I really don't know what makes this do this. Every once in a while, it does it.
What makes it do it is pushing down. Do you have a wheel in the middle of your mouse?
Yeah, but I don't do that. I know what you're talking about.
You push
I know
down
exactly
the wheel,
what you're talking about.
That circle will show up, and you have to go outside and click with a single click to get it gone.
Yeah, but it's the articles that go up and down, jump
like the
side.
Yeah. They do that. Never mind.
Yeah. Okay, it's all right. I got it fixed. Be quiet.
Good.
Let's not talk about it. I'm afraid something will happen. I found that article I want to talk about because it's important. And it's on the NASCA site, and my God, it's not even a quarter of the way down. I will be speaking to newspaper people about this because this is a reality that happens every summer. And it's Texas. It's called New School Year May Increase in Child Abuse or Neglect Reports. As summer vacation winds down, the month of August brings the coming of a new year for many children. But unfortunately, the start of a new academic year can also lead to more child abuse and neglect reports as teachers, staff, and other parents notice signs of harm that children suffered over the summer. Now, everything goes up over the summer, the sexual, the physical, the mental, the emotional, everything. And a lot of times domestic violence. Out of more than 160,000 completed reports of child abuse and neglect last year, schools were the second most common source. See, this is how bad it gets. The Texas Department of Family and Protective Services completed 33,146 investigations as a result of reports from school officials, falling just behind reports from medical personnel. It's not unusual for there to be a spike in the suspect abuse and neglect reports when school year resumes. Unfortunately, that's the truth. And that's from the executive director of CASA. We've had a huge increase of children entering the foster care program this summer. In the last 45 days, there's been a lot of kids going into foster care. I need more trained advocates before school even begins so we can tackle the anticipated spike that will occur when school actually does begin. I need more volunteers to become an advocate for a child as soon as possible. The increase in reports translates to more children entering the foster care system and a greater need for CASA. And that, again, of course, we know this, but other people might not know what that means. Court-appointed special advocate volunteers from CASA to represent children. That means when you go into court, they go in with them. Okay. CASA volunteers are everyday community members that are specially trained and appointed by judges to advocate for children in court. So imagine how frightening it is for children to be taken out of their homes and placed sometimes far away from their families. Well, yes, it is. It's a very frightening thing. But sometimes when they go into foster care, that can be frightening, too. The whole thing is frightening. So anyway, they're asking for people to step forward to advocate. And it says there are 387 children in foster care system right now in Liberty Chamber counties, 387 children in foster care. And that's what this is talking about. They need compassionate, dedicated volunteers. So my point in all of this, and the reason why I want to get the word out now at this time of the year also, first of all, child abuse is 365 days a year. But there are some months that are worse than other months. And when children do go back into school, Bill, they are many times bruised. They've been hit in the head. The parents have short fuses because of the economy or maybe just plain bad parenting, whatever the case might be. So I'm hoping that all teachers will do their job, and if they see something, and not just in one state alone like Texas, but in all the states, if you see a child who comes in bruised, a lot of times they're going to be isolated. They're going to be, they're going to be too quiet, or they could be just the opposite and act like a kid who has ADHD without having ADHD. They might be dirty. They may not make eye contact. These children have been abused over the summertime. And actually, to some children, going to school is a good thing because they're getting away from the abuse. With other children, they've been so damaged that whether they're in school or whether they're home, it doesn't matter, but they're going to look a certain way and they're going to behave a certain way. So that's what that article is about, and I just thought I'd add a little bit to it because the stats are going up.
You talk about this all the time. I know it's a topic you present to people, especially before the end of the summer, like now. I'm glad that they have some. You think about it now. 387 kids in the foster care system in the one county. You know how many counties Texas has? There's scores of counties.
Yeah.
In Texas. And they, every one of them has some problem. It's amazing how many kids are involved.
Now, this is in Liberty slash Chambers counties. That's what it says.
That might be two counties. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. 387 children. So you see, I mean, the abuses are horrible. They're horrific. And, you know, it may actually the physical might be even worse right now than the sexual because the parents, they don't have the money. They slap the kids around. The kids want to go out. They want, you know, they want to go on vacation. Well, you can't go on vacation. We don't have the money. But what I've tried to tell parents, and I do this all the time, is there's you can spend time with your children. You don't always have to go someplace, you know, fantastic. Take them out to a park. Find some place where you can go swimming. Go on picnics. That'll leave memories that are good memories in your children's brains. I never had any of those. Bill probably, you know, a lot of us don't have it. But right. If you do, take them fishing. If you have little boys and sometimes little girls who go fishing, I wouldn't go because I don't like worms. I would never put a worm on a hook. No, no, no. I like fluffy things. I don't like worms. But anyway, the point is this.
Caterpillar.
the, no. You're right. That's fluffy. Ew. I wouldn't do it. I'd just sit and watch. No. but anyway, the point is you can do other things, you know, with your children. You don't have to go to Europe. My friends used to make up stories when they went to school. One girl went to Europe, for God's sake. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you know, you can have fun with your children. Go out and play ball with them. When's the last time you saw some guy, unless they're on teams, playing, you know, handball with their kid, you know, throwing the ball back and forth, or basketball? There's parks around. Mm-hmm. You know, go play hoops. Do something, for God's sake. And that way you have good memories for the child and you know, you're bonding better. You're bonding. And so it doesn't have to be some fantastic, you know, place to go. You can do this and that's just as good. Yeah.
I think this is a really good argument for intervention signs to be taught to teachers and people who are part of the system that sees the children right after summertime too. Because some mm-hmm. of those kids are going to have bad experiences out, you know, during the summer, and the first person that sees these things are the new teacher, for example, you know, that the kid ends up in the classroom with. And they need to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, some of the signs of abuse are not physical. A lot of them are not. And what
That's
to do
right.
about it. And CASA, really this article is about CASA. And, they, mm-hmm. you know, we love CASA, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it's not obvious, but we do here at NASCA. And with, really what the article is saying, there's 387 kids in the foster care system in this one little area of Texas. But only 136 of them have been served by CASA volunteers. That means that they have only half as many volunteers because these are pretty much one-on-one, you know, situations. So they're making an appeal here, you know, for people in their own community. But I'd say this applies to every community in the country that has a CASA. And if you don't have a CASA, you should try and get one put in place, you know.
Right, right.
Court-appointed
special
advocate. Right.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And that's what's so important, Bill, you know. And, you know, you see, when the pedophiles see that people are working together, okay, in a community and in all communities, we can't stop people from being pedophiles, but we can certainly educate the children and maybe even save children just by spending more time with them. Don't forget, pedophiles go where children go, and if they see children who look uncared for, they're sad children, they don't make eye contact, then they're going to try and groom them. They will try and be their friend. And, you know, that child is in trouble, okay? So
mm-hmm.
I don't care how poor you are, you can go on a picnic. Don't tell me you can't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a gourmet meal. Just go out and be with your kids in the woods somewhere. Go camping. You know, go swimming, play ball, like I said, spend time. And your children will be safer, and you'll have memories. They'll have memories.
Okay.
Okay.
I agree. All right. That's funny. if you're talking about things like that, and just with my own three grandkids, the oldest one and the youngest one just love stuff like that. The middle one could care absolutely nothing. He nothing about it. Although he did go fishing just a couple days ago in their pond, and he caught a bluegill that was bigger than my son's hand. It was huge. Like, no big deal, you know, so what? But the other two, and that's just saying kids are so different, you know. Two of them would love stuff like this, and the middle one, no big deal. Yeah, he's not interested.
Right. But you know what? Let me tell you something, MJ. I would have given anything, okay, even if it was something that I didn't like, if my parents, my mother, my stepfather, whatever, someone in the family had paid some attention to me.
Right.
And in those days, you could, this is terrible, you could go to the movies for a quarter or 35 cents, I forget which it was, and go to the movies with the kids, something. But these parents, they sit back and they don't do anything. And then what happens is the tempers start to flare. The kids are frustrated, the parents are frustrated, and the kids get whacked in the head. That's what happens.
Yeah. Agreed.
That was pretty much my experience.
Well, there you go.
Yep. Just came back from a family event on my wife's side this afternoon, and we met at one of our relatives' homes, and there were about 35, 40 people there, all family and partners. And I was in a situation to be able to talk to teenagers who are now 40-something. Like, the last time I really had a chance to talk with them, they were in their late teens, and I haven't seen them for ages. So all good stuff, but in the one-on-ones, you know, so many of them indicated that their early life was troubled by their parents' behaviors, which gets to the article on domestic violence, just how damaging it is. It struck me as shocking to the point that I was sort of out of sorts over it afterwards, and couldn't sleep last night. You know, it's the sort of thing that upsets me, of course, because I know exactly what they're talking about, and their parents are on my wife's side, and my wife claims that she was never beaten and was never molested or anything like that, but the boys were not good guys, mm-hmm. and the dad wasn't a good mm-hmm. guy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just so damn common.
Yeah.
And so many people lose so much opportunity to really live their own lives because they don't really know who they are, and they aren't free, or they aren't encouraged to explore their own possibilities and go forward, because the parents have been at least overbearing, and if not physically abusive, and or sexually. So a whole bunch of hurting souls there. And it was tough to be there without blowing my cork, you know, on the family. But I managed to hold it in. Anyway, that's my comment.
No, it was a good comment. Because you know what happens? We've spoken about this before many times on the show. A part of us dies, you know, inside. You see?
Oh, yeah.
This is why when pedophiles or sex offenders, prepubescent is pedophile, okay? Someone who likes 14, 15-year-olds and up to 18, they're sex offenders. They're all sex offenders, but they're under that category. The point is, when you abuse a child, when you do that, that child dies inside. And I want them to get the stiffest sentence they can. I don't want this 3 to 5 year bit, you know, because this is a lifetime sentence for us, okay? I can still get triggered today if I, excuse me, if I see something that's, well, maybe it's a smell, or and I can't even smell that much. I can smell ammonia, gasoline. My nose got chopped off when I was 4. They had to sew it back on. Yeah, I almost died. But I've almost died so many times that when I do finally die, I won't be surprised. You know, it is the way it is.
And
you know?
St. Peter's going to say, well, it took you a while, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, here I am. But anyway, the point is this. You know, if it's a very pungent smell, I can smell, or it can be anything that can trigger a person. You know,
yeah.
If I smell cigar smoke, I think of my disgusting uncle because he smokes cigars. Okay, so I mean, yeah. And that I can smell. So you
sure.
know, it, you know. So I mean, what happens to kids when they've been sexually, physically, emotionally abused, neglected, whatever, or domestic violence? The whole nine yards, the whole thing. Put it all together.
I won't own a. A hairbrush that isn't round.
I got you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing what stays with us and for how long it stays with us. Some of it forever,
I'm only 72. Come on, Bill. I'm just a young 72.
Young.
Come on.
Yeah. And Carol shows up at the pearly gates. He's going to tell her, I've been calling you forever.
Well, there's been
how
a lot of
tries.
How
many times do I have to tell you that?
I'll tell you that. There's been a lot of tries. Yes, there has been.
Yeah.
I'm just plain stubborn.
That a girl. Good for you.
Yeah,
bless you.
I'm a fighter. That.
You got to be. Yeah.
I am.
Yeah, down toward the bottom, Bill, are we ready to move on?
Yeah, sure. That sounds good.
New York, Queens. This is about 60% down the list. It's a New York story. Queens couple allegedly starved beat daughter with baseball bats, broom handles for years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hit with everything you can imagine that might be in a home. And then some.
Mm-hmm.
As were my siblings. And my sister, who's currently in end-stage cancer, has daughters, 3 daughters, and they are all a mess. I have a brother with 4 kids. Each of them are a mess. And when I sent a message out to a bunch of people, I think including you, Bill, last week about domestic violence, I don't know if you saw it. I got a really snarky letter from my brother in Vancouver asking why I thought I should, what gives you the right to send me this sort of stuff? I'm not interested in it. Stop it. And I had written a very explicit and detailed trigger warning. And said, do not open this email attachment unless you are up for this sort of stuff, you know. So, of course, he opens it up and beats me up with it. That's the sort of sibling, dysfunction, or dysfunctional relationships, rather. With siblings that come out of abusive families, because everybody sees it differently. As I heard about from my nieces and nephews on my wife's side over the weekend. So, you know, it's just as everybody knows. I should say everybody over age 50 should know and probably does, but most choose to ignore the fact that we are not wired to be kind and gentle and giving. We are wired to take care of ourselves and to and to prevail. And it's the teachings of wise sages, in my case, Jesus, that enable us to have any hope for a good outcome, because we try to be better people, you know, less damaging to each other. Anyway, that's my sermonette for tonight. That article is just too brutal to for me to read out loud. So I'm not going to do it.
It's pretty bad. I tell you, it says at one point that the girl was taken to the hospital. It doesn't say who took her. And prior to that point, it mentions only her mother and father, or stepfather, whatever, stepmother, and as being the abusers. And then it all of a sudden says she was taken to the hospital where doctors saw she was very thin, and then she was taken back to the hospital a couple of months later, where the doctors or the personnel noticed bruises and marks and scars, and then it was at that point they launched an investigation. So I'm wondering how she got to the hospital, but
exactly,
because these kids are often not taken by the perpetrator. That's for sure.
Correct.
Well, I'm thinking it should have been reported after the first visit to the emergency room.
Of course.
It shouldn't have gone on and had her endure that torture for a few more weeks. That was just
over the top.
She weighed 58 pounds and was wearing dirty clothes. She was 12 years old. Come on.
My gosh.
Exactly.
That's disgusting.
I just have to wonder what the emergency room personnel were thinking. They weren't.
No, they weren't thinking, okay? I remember reading that. That got me so mad, MJ, because when you take a child to the emergency room and they're in that condition, why in the name of God, all right, doesn't someone do something about it?
Right.
I've been in such positions in my life where I was bleeding and you know, from barbed wire, cuts all over, hair a mess, dress torn, and why didn't someone help me? Okay, what's wrong with people? It makes me so darn mad. I won't curse on air. I don't like cursing anyway, but it makes me so blasted mad. That's as much you get out of me. You know, that people.
Yeah.
I know what I'm thinking. I won't say it. But anyway, it just makes me so mad that people don't respond. What is wrong with civilization? We're supposed to be civilized people. What's wrong with society? You see a kid like that, for God's sake, you get the kid help. Now I'm getting upset.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't understand for obvious reasons, but we are now mandated, and we have been for quite a few years, as each hospital in the nation is mandated. When you go in, you have to ask specific key questions to adults about whether or not they feel that they're safe in their home. We have questions about, are you in an abusive relationship? Is anybody hurting you? Are you afraid to go back to your house? I mean, it's not that they totally ignore this situation, but the thing is, we are now required to ask these questions. It should be at the forefront of every person's mind that is working in a hospital setting. When they see something like this, it's like, you know, the alarm should go off.
Right.
It didn't.
Yeah. You see, people don't want to get involved. But when they're mandated reporters, see, this is why they should be held accountable, you know, for not reporting. Absolutely. And then all of a sudden, they'll do a turnaround. We know the Florida had mentioned that bill. I don't know if they've actually, but if that's actually been put in force, Florida being one of the states, where if you see someone who's, you know, being abused and if you don't report it, they consider it, you know, a big time, more than a misdemeanor.
Right.
All right. New Jersey is still a misdemeanor.
It's on the books, but I don't think it's tested. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
There's an article. Yeah, there's an article we don't have to refer to, but it's talking about Indiana giving instruction to teachers as they come back for the new school year. They hope to make this every year an every year thing, but it's talking on how to recognize abuse in the state of Indiana. If you don't report it, your mandated reporter maximum sentence is 180 days. Well, I think they should start handing out some of those sentences.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, absolutely.
Me too.
I agree. Yeah, and I don't know about the rest of the provinces in Canada, but Ontario mandates that teachers must report directly to the, not to the principal, but to the Department of Health.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that no other authority in the education system could derail a report.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, of course, 180 days is a misdemeanor punishment.
Correct.
And that's what we say is that the only thing that Florida has going for it, is it's made it a felony, which means a year or more, and a fine. And that's what it's a much more serious crime, a felony, than a misdemeanor. There are other states like Indiana that have misdemeanor type rules about being mandated reporter, but Florida is the only one that requires every adult on pain of a felony to be a mandated reporter. And that's an untested, like you say, MJ, they haven't really taken anybody to task using the law yet, so it'll take a while before we know whether they're really serious about it, but it is there. Let me just jump in here and say at the top of the hour that you are listening to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by Los Angeles Community Policing and the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And my name is Bill Murray. I'm your host this evening. I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, and I am myself an adult survivor of child abuse. And on the air with me tonight are a panel of people who are helping me do tonight's show. And you can join them by calling in at 646-595-2118 at any point during the show. We provide the materials and the topics for the show tonight, so you don't have to do that. And it's pretty much an opinion show. We'd like to know what your position is on any of the articles that we point to or want to discuss. With me are MJ Goings from rural Ohio, who's a registered nurse. Carol Levine, one of our most engaged volunteers from Northwest New Jersey, an author of Panic Child, the book Panic Child, and Ken Hurd, who's hailing from Ontario, Canada. He represents Canada, and he's been on a panel multiple times now, and we're really enjoying having him. Those three people, and you can join them by calling 646-595-2118. I hope you will.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, all right, guys, thanks for letting me jump in there with my announcement.
Where would you like to go now, Bill?
Well, anywhere anybody wants. I don't have one picked out.
Go ahead, MJ.
Go ahead.
You want to flip a coin? How are we going to do this?
Go ahead, Carol.
Okay. what do I got here? It just stopped here on Florida. Okay, we're right down at the end of the page, about an inch from the bottom. It's Florida. Parents of bullied Florida girl who killed herself sued school board. I remember this case from, I remember this case, what was it, about a year ago or whatever, maybe it'll say in here. The parents of a 12-year-old Florida girl who killed herself after being bullied by schoolmates filed a lawsuit Monday accusing the school system of negligence for failing to stop the torment. Well, now they've decided to actually, to sue the school. She jumped from a silo at an abandoned cement plant in Lakeland, Florida. I remember her doing that last September, after enduring months of bullying at school. and online too. I believe that there are kids that actually walked her home at her house too. But anyway, the lawsuit identifies the primary bully, G.S., it just says G.S., whom it accuses of intentional infliction of emotional distress. It also accuses Cemex Construction Materials Florida, LLC, of negligence maintenance of its abandonment facility. Anyway, the point is, this girl was terribly bullied, and now they're going to try and sue people. That's what they're doing. And in their mind's eye, they feel that people could have intervened, and this girl would still be alive today. This is how they feel. Now, it seeks a minimum of $15,000 from the Polk County School District for failing to protect Sedgwick, that was the girl's name, during the year of 2012-13 school year. And let's see what else. Defendant school board knew and should have known that its failure to adequately and expeditiously discipline G.S. for her conduct would result in further escalating patterns of disruptive and violent behavior, which in turn would threaten the safety of Crystal Lake students. Okay, now, what does it say here, too? Okay, laws limiting liability for government agencies would normally cap damages to $200,000. But the lawsuit claims that its charges against the board are not covered by the cap. Okay. Now, there was a lot of controversy over this this incident. I remember that. And I think that all schools, of course, children are bullied in school all the time. This is horrible. And some kids are more fragile than other children. All right. It's a terrible thing to be bullied. I was bullied for a while in school, but I figured I won't say that word. I'll just become a real toughie. That's what I'll be, and that's just what I did, and then they left me alone. They were scared of me. Well, some kids don't handle it that way, okay? They internalize. They internalize everything. Maybe they come from homes where they're being neglected. I was too, but I was just so tough that I wouldn't let anyone hurt me, you see. It hurt, but I wasn't going to kill myself over that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are children who are so fragile mentally, emotionally, that to be bullied and constantly bullied. This girl, too, I remember this so well, this case. This girl, there were people that actually walked down to her house. They were screaming outside of her home. I don't know why the police weren't called. There were all different kinds of things that were happening. And finally, she couldn't deal with it anymore. So that's what she did. She jumped to her death. That's it.
Tragic. Terrible.
It is tragic.
I think this also had an element of sexting or texting or social media or something.
It wasn't
just face-to-face. It was also sharing stuff over the Internet and stuff like that or over the cell phone.
I said that.
I remember that.
So, this girl was really being badgered. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
And I had thought, I don't think it mentions it in this article here, but I had thought that she was finally being homeschooled, if I remember correctly, or maybe that's another case. But the point is this, she was being terribly, terribly badgered. She couldn't deal with it. She doesn't have the type of personality, say, like I do. I'd go outside with a gun, and I'd chase them down the road. I wouldn't say I'd shoot them, but I'd scare the pants off of them. You know, I mean, I believe in fighting back. But she didn't have this ability. She didn't have this inside of her to fight back.
No.
So she gave up.
No, not everybody. Not everybody can.
No,
you know,
so she gave up. She gave up.
Yeah. We have somebody calling in who's new, and I think it's Regular Girl. Let's see if it is. She says she's in San Diego, right? Is that you?
It is. Hi, Bill. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm doing better.
Good.
Very good.
Yep. Yeah. I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
That's okay. That's all right. I'm glad you're back.
I guess I'm stronger than... Than the bullies probably wish I was. You know, I was like Carol. Although I wouldn't have known that when I was first being bullied, that I was going to turn into a bully, but I did. at a young age. It was a survival thing. I remember it consciously. But, you know, regarding this particular case and cases like them, what I think that I know seems to be true, and it was true in my case. I mean, as I look back on the kind of bully that I turned into, I was, like, when I look back on it now, the kinds of things that I did, you could trace them, you could follow the dots right to the adult parent abusers, you know, or the teacher abusers. You could follow the dots. And I think that we've had that kind of information about child abuse and about bullying and for long enough. You know, there are child psychiatrists and psychologists who've done work for years now who know this, who know that, you know, a bully is, for the most part, I mean, in the upper 90 percentile, someone who has internalized the abuser's actions. And so my point that I'm getting to, and I know it seems to be a long way off that this next thing I'm going to say will happen, but in a case like this, you know, which instance where it involves school and teachers who were watching. Sorry about that. I'm moving to another room. I think that, you know, it's if we as a society and a community want to do something about it, I know where to go in terms of the bully, and I don't think that I think the child should be held responsible for their action because, you know, in a dysfunctional home, they're definitely, you know, going to be short on the stick in learning that kind of stuff, you know, so to speak. So, of course, they should be held accountable, but that the parent, the abusive parent, should be really held accountable and should pay some big money. I think there would be some headway made if the parents of the bullies, no matter how old they are, even if you're in the 70s, that they also are held accountable. Now, how it is that we deal with privacy issues in light of this, of course it's complicated, but anyway, what are your thoughts on that? And thanks for taking my call.
Well, I don't know. Ultimately, parents have a responsibility for raising kids in a certain way that aren't menaces to society in that sense. I mean, what do you guys think? Carol, what do you think? Either one. Go ahead first.
MJ, you go first this time. I'm doing something. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say kind of isn't a direct answer to your question, but it was a thought I had. I think part of the big problem with bullying is the fact that we, our generation, can look at it knowing what we went through as kids and say, oh, you know, kids are going to be kids. It's no big deal. But what a lot of people don't understand is, yes, we called it, we were picked on as kids, you know, or so and so. But the tools to really hurt weren't as available as they are now. Kids can be bullied in so many ways now that we couldn't even imagine. They didn't exist when we were growing up. So, yeah, kids will be kids and they're going to pick on each other, but it was not like it is today. You couldn't make a comment or throw a barb at somebody and then have it go viral and, you know, the whole world know about it, you know. It's different today. It's more vicious today. And the kids are aware of how to hurt each other in ways that we didn't have. You know, people have to wise up to the fact that the bullying of today is different than the bullying of yesterday. It's different from the bullying of just, you know, 30 years ago. You know, when my kids were little, it's different, completely different now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of truth in that, you can be sure. Because they walk around with their phones and they text each other and they do all kinds of stuff. And of course, the internet, there's just so many things that they can do. When we were growing up or when our children were growing up, there was maybe more physical where they'd slap each other in the head. I always use that because that's where kids get slapped so often, you know. They'd take someone, they'd tie them up, you know, do terrible things that way. But this is a continuous thing. They'll pick on a kid, and then it will, like you said, it'll go viral. It'll get on all over the place, and then this one says that, and that one says this. Before you know it, you have a whole bunch of children speaking about this one poor child, making up all kinds of stories, and it's a very terrible thing. It's a very terrible thing. They'd rather have the beating. Trust me. They would rather, get slapped in the head. And maybe their books taken, their pocketbook taken, or whatever, then have that, because this is something that just goes all over the place, and they have no way of stopping it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's modern technology is a wonderful thing, but it is also something that is just simply can be so destructive.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Ken? Should parents be held responsible for their children who end up being bullies?
I think they are just naturally so. And I think that it's a tough one. I mean, of course, we have to find a way to break the chain of abuse of every sort. And we only do that by intervening with individuals as individuals. I suppose if our nations collectively agreed on some sort of a worldwide campaign to bring awareness and really get into it, and I'll come back to that in a minute. That would be a good thing, but very often the parents themselves were abused, and so were their parents, and so were their parents, and so were their parents. So it's it's intergenerational customs, practices that are considered okay in the family, and this is the generation. I mean, we who are talking about it here right now, and everybody else on the planet that's talking about it or starting to talk about it, might be, the first generation ever to try to end that sort of thing and do more about prevention in families where there has been a history.
I think one of the things that MJ said that rang a bell with me is that all of us experienced some kind of teasing, lots of us anyway, when we were young. But today's world is a little different, and there's a lot of different, more vehicles, let's say, for it to happen. And one of the things that we accepted way back when was that it was okay. And we no longer think that way. It's kind of like society doesn't think it's okay, for children to be paddled with a wooden paddle anymore. Although when we were young, it was okay. It's not anymore. And we got to explain that, I think, maybe to parents and to adults, or maybe youngsters as they're approaching parenthood, that it's not okay anymore. And they need to be teaching their children this. And I don't know how many really teach, I don't even know if they teach manners. With even no manners, but they should teach some kind of civics lessons to children.
I agree, and that's practically 100% absent in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
The teaching of civics and civility.
Yeah, it's gone away here. It's gone away here too. It's been sacrificed for for the sake of the school boards not being able to put their curriculums together. Complaining about the money they have to spend and so forth. They've done away with all the humanities. And civics is just
that's
just
right
here.
And that's true at the university level too, by the way. I mean, nobody's being in. Universities still have their humanities courses, but I can't think of any career advisor that I've ever been around, and I was one for quite a long time, who thinks it's a good idea to just get an arts degree as a precursor to getting serious about your career.
Well, I have a I have a I'm of the opinion that every kid that gets out of high school ought to be asked to do 2 years or 3 years of compulsory service of some kind. That's just me. I talked about that when we were doing the community policing study. They used to talk more about this, you know, from that perspective. But I think there's something everybody can contribute, and in the process of contributing, you learn so much about yourself and about, you know, the community that's around you. And I'm not saying they have to all go in the military. That would be one choice. But I can see all kinds of other choices too, where they would, you know, they would contribute maybe 2 years or 3 years to society,
public
and
service.
Then go to college.
Public service. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Bill, I don't know the status of the Peace Corps. Is it still operating?
You know, I think it does. I think it exists, but it's not promoted at all. I think VISTA exists too.
And so likewise in Canada. Here we had a program started in the 60s called Katimovic. It's an Inuit Eskimo word for peacemaking, and that program has been shut down by our, if you like, GOP party here, the ultra right wing government of our current Prime Minister Harper, and they're against any. Very, very far right wing conservatives, and you know, but everybody's telling them that they need kids that have been well schooled in advanced mathematics and sciences. And when I look at the doctors that I know these days, the younger ones, they're all very, you know, they are all very bright mathematicians and scientists, but they have no soul. They know what they're doing pharmaceutically and medically, and they know how to make money and how to, you know, blah blah blah. But I find that they are hostile to patients, and that's because they just have no empathy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly.
It doesn't surprise me for you to hear you say that, Ken, because what I've seen over the last, let's say 20 years, go back that far maybe, is the fact that hospitals have, here in the States, have left the realm of being that loving place to give good care. We still give good care, but now it's geared more towards we're a business. You know, we were supposed to, I don't know how many years ago, stop calling patients patients. We were supposed to call them clients. Baloney.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's the mindset that they use now in training a lot of the physicians.
Unfortunately, in Canada, I don't know how it works in the States, but the selection of candidates for medical training, which costs in Canada, our government's well over $2.5 million per graduated basic MD. The selection process is all about maths and hard sciences like chemistry and so on. So you know, you're not getting people who've been trained or directed in ways that make them empathetic and interested in the whole person. They're really interested in get them in, get them out, get the money, cash the check, and you know, retire early.
Yeah, that's very true. I had I had an operation about, oh my God, was it 4 or 5 years ago now? I don't think I was, no, I wasn't on the show quite yet. I don't believe. But anyway, the point is this. I had this huge, huge cyst in my neck, and it had to come out. The doctor that was going to perform the surgery, I had to go to a convention. He said, when I get back in 2 weeks' time, you know, we'll proceed with the operation. Okay. So he came back, and he was shocked because the cyst had grown so. I mean, it was really, really awful. I had over 100 stitches. Now, he didn't want, he didn't want to perform the surgery himself. In fact, he felt like he wasn't qualified enough, so we went to Hackettstown, to that hospital there. And I'm going to say Hackettstown because I'm going to tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my surgery done, and I came through it, and they had to give me a tremendous amount of anesthesia because it was much worse than what they anticipated. Mm-hmm. So I was under for more than 4 hours. And I actually lost some hair. I've grown it back. But the point is, at the time, I was a mess and over 100 stitches. So my doctor figured he was done. The other guy left. And so this tech came around to take my blood pressure. And I was already dressed by that time. And he said, well, you can't leave. I have to take your blood pressure. So he took my blood pressure. And he said, oh, my God. He said, this can't be right. Let me go get another machine. So he went and he got another machine, and it came back, and he said, my God, this one's even worse. Your blood pressure is so low that you shouldn't be alive. So,
oh, that was a nice thing to say.
Well, that's what he
said. Wow.
I was still stoned. I didn't care.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Really, yeah.
But anyway,
you ought to be dead.
Well, yeah, that's what he said to me. Well,
he was just trying to cheer
kid,
you up, that's all, yeah.
This kid was scared. I saw, I may have been a little bit out, but I saw this kid's face, all right? He didn't like what he saw at all. So I noticed that the doctor that I was usually going to hadn't quite left the building yet. He was down at the nurse's station, so I went down to him. I said, hey, my blood pressure's too low. And he said, well, don't talk to me about it. Go to your heart specialist. And he left.
No.
Now,
yeah.
Here I am with the tech going nuts, and his I turned and I looked at him. He wasn't far away. He turned, and his jaw dropped. My blood pressure was so low, I shouldn't be walking. So my husband was standing there, and I said, get me home. We got home,
yep.
And mm-hmm. I started to drink tons of coffee. I ate tons of candy. I ate everything that I could think of that would make my blood pressure go up. I treated myself, and
mm-hmm.
I drank black coffee. I don't like black
yep.
coffee. But mm-hmm. with the caffeine, with all the caffeination, okay, with all the, that made my blood pressure rise, and I do know how to take blood pressure and everything because I've worked in
sure.
medical over at Greystone for a while. So
mm-hmm.
I kept taking my blood pressure every 10 minutes, not 5 minutes. I give myself an extra 5, so every 10 minutes. And the more I walked around, the more that I drank the coffee, the more chocolate that I ate, my blood pressure finally stabilized. It got to a point where I was no longer fearful. Now, that's the treatment that I got in Hackettstown, New Jersey Hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can't say that I've had that sort of or that degree of bad service, but it certainly is indicative, you know, of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm going to have to.
I was not a person. I see. This is what we're talking about. I wasn't a person.
Yeah.
He had done his job, maybe fluffed it up a little bit, and that
mm-hmm.
guy was standing there. He was gone, and my doctor just said, "Go see your cardiologist." That's it.
Yeah.
Not another
yeah.
word. No
crazy.
Caring.
My
goodness. So there you go. That just backs up what you said.
Yes, I know.
I'm
going to
step off the line just for a minute. Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, Ken. Okay, go ahead, regular girl.
I still have a lot of serious medical issues going on, and the treatment's really bad. And what I'm thinking as I'm listening to you all is that, you know, as a survivor of abuse, we get used to being treated badly. So that what I've noticed in this journey with these medical issues is that it's taken other people in my life to actually point out to me, you know, in a way that I can hear that these things are they're abominable, you know, some of the things that have been happening regarding the, quote, medical care. Care is the word that should be absent from it, from the medical business events. But what I'm most importantly trying to articulate is that we get used to being treated badly. Every kid, you know, most every kid gets sick at some time. If you have abusive parents, you know, there's going to be some inappropriate ways that was dealt with as well. All the other adults, survivors of child abuse that I know, you know, have stories that deal with the bad way that their health was treated as well, you know. Because it's such a part of growing up, you know. It's part of taking care of someone else, another human, living, sentient being. Is, you know, we're designed to you know, be at different levels of health, and so someone's going to get sick, and it's interesting, you know. Mm-hmm. System.
I think it has more to do with our psychological makeup when we're abused and damaged kids, that we accept more abuse. You know, already broken people are susceptible to additional, you know, pain and suffering. And we have
like
such low self-esteem, too, that we, you know, like magnets. You know, for me, you know, no wonder I'm, you know, I'm being treated so badly. After all, I'm such a terrible person. You know, I'm such a piece of crap. You know, makes sense to me, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
And you know, people either succumb to it. You know, they crush. Okay, or they become tough. It seems like there's nothing in the middle. You know, and I somewhere along the line, I became a very rough person. But I'm glad I became a rough person, all right, because I don't want to fall by the wayside. I don't want to be one of those that does go and commit suicide because I fall into depression. I fall down into that pit where I had been once before in my life, actually a couple times in my life. And one time when I did slice my wrist, and then later on, during the first marriage, right after I was strangled. He was trying to kill me. But anyway, yeah, I fell down into that pit the second time. And then I said, you know what? No more. This is bull, and you can finish the rest of it. I'm just not going to stand for it. And now today, yeah. When people treat, you know, if someone treats me poorly today, I don't care who they are. I don't care if it's members of my family. I don't care if it's someone on the outside. They better get out of my way because I'm just too rough. Yeah. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but that's my mechanism. That's the way that I fight it, okay? That's my saving grace. That's what I use to, you know, to keep myself up. Otherwise, I'd fall down again. I won't stand for it.
I think that what Bill said before is right in this way, that this is the first time in history that I'm aware of where people have said, that's not okay. Not okay to treat me like that. And then, you know, you can bring it on it. After treating others, or sometimes it works the other way, you know. But I found that for me, it required a tremendous amount of anger just for me to say, that's not okay. Which makes me think that, I remember hearing this years ago that depression was anger turned inward, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me think that there's a lot of truth to that, because I do know that what I said is true. Just for me to say, that's not okay, it took a tremendous amount of what would have seemed to others and did seem to others inappropriate rage. That's because they were just seeing the tip of the iceberg. you know.
Well, when you internalize, when you just squash it, when you hold it down for so long, then it does take so long for you to build up that courage, you know, to just to even just to stick up for yourself. And then once you do it more and more, you can become an angry person, and you can be very, very angry, and even sometimes not at appropriate times anger type of thing, because you have been so abused and you have been so knocked down for so many years. Now, what you have to do is find an even balance with that, and you have to learn when it's right to be angry and when it's not right to be angry, you know, and that takes time also. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. It's like there's this, there, for me, there was this, the anger, there was this, it was the last straw, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so then anything, no matter who it was, you know, they were not the person who had abused me in that particular way over and over and over and over again for years. But if it was, there was this period, you know, over the last few years where if it was, once I said, that's not okay, you know, and the rage came out, and I was no longer internalizing the anger,
mm-hmm.
directing it towards
mm-hmm.
me. For me, it was weight gain. I mean, I got up to over 400 pounds, you know, stuffing it all. And once I said, it's not okay, anytime to anybody that happened, the reinforcement that I got that I was on the right track was that I didn't need to eat that much anymore. I lost a tremendous amount of weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of my drug and alcohol behavior stopped. It was really interesting.
And that's
so,
freedom. That's freedom.
That's great.
That's wonderful, because when you're overeating or you're drinking or whatever it is, you're drugging, whatever you're doing, you know, you're just knocking your body apart. And then when you can get to the point in your life where you can function without drinking or without drugging, to me it's basically the same thing, or overeating, whatever the, you know, it is that you're abusing, whether you're cutting, whatever. Not only have you moved a step forward, but you have become a new person. And that's when happiness sets in. You learn to be happy. Okay? And this is something that many times we as survivors have to learn how to become, is happy. We have to learn to become happy with ourselves, too. And boy, is that a biggie. You know, we have to learn to love ourselves, because for so many years we were told that we were no good, we'd never amount to anything, we were stupid or whatever. And then you have to find out, you know, hey, this isn't true, and not only believe it, but you start moving ahead, you start going on your healing journey, you are on your healing journey, and the further you get along, the more you love yourself, and yes, you do become less tolerant of certain types of behavior, and then you also learn to become more tolerant of other types of behavior, and that's where the balancing comes in.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. Well, like, because I have noticed and been talking about this with other people recently, it's now I don't need to say it or verbalize it with anger. What has happened, I'm seeing now, is that I just know that I don't want to be around that. And
mm-hmm.
so I'm finding myself with people who are not abusive to me, finally, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a long time. It's really, really done. It's something that I just noticed recently, actually.
And don't you feel freer? Don't you feel lighter? Don't you feel better?
Well, honestly, what I'm noticing is that
mm-hmm.
I'm using food again in the wrong way.
Oh, okay.
So that's gotten my attention. You know, I think it's maybe one of those, you know, you take three steps forward,
mm-hmm.
and like you said, there's something uncomfortable for people like me about being happy and free. I hate to admit that.
But you
I,
have
I'm
to
the
allow
same way.
Yourself.
I'm
you
the same
to
way.
Allow yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and so
I struggle all the time.
I'm noticing that with the food, you know, I'm using it self-destructively. It
mm-hmm.
helps to talk about it, you know, to have people in my life who are open to hearing me talk about it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then say, hey, you know, what's going on here?
Well,
am
you guys,
I falling back?
You don't deserve to be happy and free? Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Because I think that ultimately the message, the underpinnings of all the abuse are is the message, I want to kill you. That's what that's what the parent is saying. These are survival issues. When I was getting beaten, I could feel that. And I noticed that when Carol was talking before about being strangled, that came into my mind. And that's why I think, adult survivors of abuse have so much trouble with basic survival issues, taking care of ourselves, getting good medical treatment, paying our rent on time, living with other people who are nice to us. These are issues of organic survival and happiness and thriving, and
that's right.
Yep. It's because we got that message, we got that message, hey, I'd rather you be dead. I mean, if your mother wants you dead, I mean, think of it.
Oh, I know, been there.
You kind of go, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something. The next time you get this crave or urge to go to the refrigerator, and it could be, something that you did as a real regular type of thing, what could you do instead that would be positive? Can you think of something that would be positive?
Honestly, I've been trying to think of something else. I have been and have not. I come up with ideas and then I guess this is the first time I'm talking to somebody who's really involved in the conversation with me about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess as I think of those things that I'd rather do first, I think they're rooted to low self-esteem issues. I say to myself, I'm not good at that anyway, or that's not going to work out anyway. But
no.
I don't.
Okay, let me say something to you. The next time, it's all right to eat. For God's sake, don't deny yourself food. Just to eat the right kind of food, okay? So that would be a positive step, okay? I don't know if you're, like, heavy into the sweets or just plain bulk rate of eating. But if you've had your two or three meals a day and you've had a couple of snacks and you're drinking the fluid intake that you're supposed to, have, then that's enough food, right? Normally speaking, right? So if you get that urge where you want to go and hit that ice cream, first of all, don't have the ice cream in the house, all right? Ooh, that's going to make me mad, but don't have it there. Instead, go out and take a walk. Go out and talk to someone, okay? The last time I spoke to you, you lived in the city. I don't know, maybe you have to be careful with that. But don't find excuses. Instead of saying, well, I'm not a good person anyway, so what does it matter? See, that's what pulls you down. You are a good person. You have to learn to love yourself more and want better. You've come a long way since the last time we've spoken to you. I can tell just by the way you're talking. So now you're on, you're three-quarters of the way, say, through your healing journey. So the next thing is trying to pull you down because you still have a little bit of that self-hatred that's in you. So it's going to try, and you're having like a tug of war. You know you should go to the refrigerator, and yet that self-hatred that you have, or at least not liking yourself, we'll put it that way, it's like a tug of war going back and forth. You have to fight that. That's where your battle is. And, do something that's positive.
It's interesting. I think I like to socialize. I think I like to talk. I think I like to communicate with other people. And I think I was humiliated about my liking to do that. I think that was part of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the most recent chapter that I came through, which I just talked about with all the rage and the anger and the expression of that, it was these mixed messages that people were getting from me, and I was getting them too as well. But as we were talking about this thing with food, I think that if I were to allow myself to communicate more with people, be more social, and with the awareness that in social interactions, there are going to be some times when I'm triggered, but to have the awareness, I've calmed down, I think, enough to, I'm not, blowing, going off at people, that I've tested that out a while now, so I don't have to be so afraid of that.
No. And you say, no, you're not going to win. I'm not going to give in. Yeah, I'm not going to give in. Go out then. If you like to socialize with people, then go out and be social. Go do something else. Something that's not food-oriented, you know. If you live in the city, you know, there's always bodegas around. There's always people out, you know, with ribs out on the street. So stay away from that area, you know. But, like, go out and be social. Go out and be social.
And it's funny. I was going to say something about food because, you know, a lot of people have issues with food who have been abused.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, any talk about it, anytime I listen to somebody else talk about their relationship with food, you know, I get something out of it. And I'm in therapy again, and
mm-hmm.
I remember when she's a new therapist, and so she said, she asked me about it because I told her about that straight off the top because I've been noticing it, and she asked me, was I binging? And I have years of binging. I've been anorexic when I was younger,
right.
And I've had bulimia, and those are related to binges. But when she said that to me, I thought about it, and I went, actually, no. You know, I'm eating too much, but it's not those planned binges that I used to do. So what I'm saying is, which is a hard piece of that, which is this, that the recovery for me has been or seemed very slow.
But still in all, I can see a difference from the last time that you were on. Now, you're going to go a few steps forward and a couple steps backwards, because that's what we all do, okay? And that's normal when you're in your recovery. But what you know in your heart, that you're still harboring some issues, and that's where the low self-esteem comes from. And then you want something to squelch that. With some people, it's cigarettes. With some people, it's booze. With other people, it's eating, whatever it might be. Okay, so what you have to do is fight that demon, that last demon, okay, and go do something positive. If you're a runner, go out and run. Who wants to do it? It's 90 degrees out, but I'm just saying, go out and run. Go socialize. Do something physical. Get out of the house, get away from the refrigerator, and go do something physical. And that's how you'll find that. That's helpful. It can be helpful.
Yeah, and I want to say that when I say, you know, it's been slow, just in case anybody, you know, for listeners out there, we're talking over, I've been consciously aware of working on food as an addiction for over 30 years, knowing that there were issues underlying it, you know, and it's taken this long to have a little bit of headway with it, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that, there were years and years where if I would have listened to somebody say, well, you just said to me, Carol, you know, I would have responded by saying, but responded with a lot of excuses.
Right. That's exactly what you would have done. And you're not using those so many excuses this time. That's where one of the differences is, and that's a good thing. So with this last part, okay, that's what I'm saying. Go do something positive. Take a walk to the store, buy a book. Not food, buy a book.
I love books.
Yeah, there you go. Go talk to people. And by the time you do that for about an hour or something, you'll come back and then drink water, okay, or juice, and go watch some
TV. Yeah, I started to drink juice again. You know I didn't drink juice for, I'm telling you, like it must be 25 years. But it's some weird, you know, aspect in a story I won't get into that really has its roots in child abuse regarding food, dysfunctional ways that I can see. But what I want to say here, too, as you said this to me about, you know, being more positive, doing something that's positive, I'm smiling because, you know, finally there are some people in my real everyday life around me in a couple of different aspects where I hear that more often, that suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's so good. It's so good.
Yes, it is. And you'll learn to love yourself more. You see, the more positive things you do, you can start, you know, counting out by one, and it'll turn into a handful and whatever. And the more
and then,
you do, you know, then you love yourself more.
Then when I get real positive and stable, I'm gonna sue those goofballs through the roof.
No, there you go. But So work on yourself now first, though, and, you know, and continue with your therapist, because that's she's doing good for you. I can see that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Can I add something?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
To the syndrome you're talking about, where we sort of regress and sort of backslide. I was in therapy for decades with two psychiatrists, or all together three, and nothing good came of that, except I didn't commit suicide, and I'm grateful for that. Mm-hmm. But when I got EMDR therapy for 2 years, about 31 sessions, and it really cleaned me up, I thought, okay, home free, away we go, you know? And then... since then, insofar as my sexual abuse took place in the church, the folks commentating tonight all know about it, but I'll just briefly tell you that I had two sessions with the Archbishop of Ontario, Canada, which is a huge area, five times the size of Texas. And he said, yes, we acknowledge that it occurred. We're sorry it happened. A long time ago, none of us were there at the time. Too bad, so sad. Would you like another cup of tea, kind of thing, you know? And mm-hmm. I had two meetings where those things happened. And to make a long story short, that's really bugging me these days. I didn't want money. I wanted them to pay for high-quality psychotherapy.
Yeah.
To get me through it. I was getting CBT and a whole bunch of drugs from these psychiatrists. None of them had a clue.
Mm-hmm.
And they still don't, and they don't want to. Most psychiatrists in Canada do not go anywhere near child abuse. And it's the only form of covered therapy that our national health system pays for. So we can't afford psychologists. What are you going to do? So anyway, I'm ticked off now over the several decades now of me hounding the Anglican Church of Canada and getting nowhere. And it's really bugging me. And I'm self marginalizing myself out of the culture, because I become increasingly more frank about it, and I don't mind speaking out in public, in the church circle, you know, about the fact that here's a Christian church that's supposed to be all about gentleness, kindness, love, and getting along, and they won't admit to their own responsibilities and pony up. I could sue them for $1.2 million and win. I've been told that by two different law firms. They don't, but I believe that we need institutions in our society that stand for something, and you know, I'm feeling right now that well, yes, they stand for something, but they don't really mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do with that?
It's interesting that you said, and they don't really mean it, because I heard you say that they admitted that they were wrong, so verbally they took responsibility, but.
Mm-hmm.
We can see, I can see, same as you, that they didn't mean it. And it has to do, you know that saying about putting money where your mouth is, you know?
Yeah.
There was this point, I remember there was this point, and this was years ago, in a different stage of my recovery, when I started to make a connection between being abused and somebody admitting that, you know, they had done the wrong thing, but then they would not make... They wouldn't put their money where their mouth is. I started to notice that, you know, even as a, I don't want to call it a culture, as a society, we do have things that represent big money when it comes to love.
For example, Valentine's Day, when it comes to love, expensive roses, it's expensive chocolates. Diamond rings are what you give to somebody that you love. So don't be coming around here, is what I started to say, you know, saying, oh, love doesn't have anything to do with money. Oh, yes, it does. And I'm connecting the dots here. And that's what I was just doing when you were talking about this. I relate a lot to what you're saying.
Thank you. Yeah. The other point that bugs me is, you know, they will take a lawsuit and spend $600,000 on each side of they will lose, and it's going to cost them another $1.2 million just to pay the lawyers. I mean, and it's crazy. I mean, it's just absurd. And I have a moral dilemma, you know, like is my Christian calling to support the church no matter what, or am I supposed to be, you know, giving some leadership here? And I'm not educated as a priest, you know, so they have no respect for me academically, because in fact I have no degrees at all, and you know, I kind of regret that, but frankly it wasn't worth the trouble. I mean, I did really well without them in my business career, and didn't waste my time fooling around with that sort of stuff, you know. So
I let me just say, we've got a couple of minutes left, Ken, that, you know, it sounds to me when you tell this story, like the church, as Regular Girl said, they verbally acknowledge it, but that's as far as they want to go. And so they've made a decision, and their decision is that they're going to force you to take the action of suing them for the $1.2 million if you want psychologists instead of psychiatrists, because then you can pay for it.
But the price
of
that
decision, it's not your decision.
Okay. And Bill, thanks for the insight, and I really get it, and thank you very much for the concern. The downside of suing and getting $1.2 million, which I wouldn't mind having, by the way, is that in the process I will be socially ostracized in the Anglican Church of Canada, and I love it. I love the way they do business in church. I like how they worship. I grew up with it. It's the stuff of my spiritual fiber. And yet I have to blow off my church to get justice from my church and be isolated and excoriated by the people that I know and like in the congregation, because nobody talks about childhood abuse. And to that, Bill, I'll just quickly point out that tonight's list of issues on the NASCA site include many that are about governments starting to take a look at what to do about supporting recoveries and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I find that very encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At the same time,
well, it's
I'm
one of the
skeptical.
Things that we follow. So we follow that. MJ knows that we're interested in that kind of story. So we get them and we put them on the site because we want people to understand that, you know, that government is doing a certain amount and it's learning a certain amount. And, of course, government represents us. The more that we get socially aware and demanding of government, the better government's going to do, you know, in responding to what we express is important to us. But until we express it, believe me, they're not going to do anything. You know,
that's right.
They're going to have the status quo. And we only have
in order for them to want to hear us, though, Bill, there has to be a body of voters who give a damn. And
that's where we're trying to increase the likelihood that people will be willing to talk about this stuff, you know, and walk through the taboo of it. Well, that's part of my problem, too, is I'm afraid to talk because I don't want to hurt the Catholic Church. But the Catholic Church, honestly, did a lot of damage to me. And it's not the whole Catholic Church that I have a problem with, but it is certain individuals and certain situations that I have a problem with. And I need to know, you know, my basic problem is my low self-esteem. And how do you counter that? You counter it by taking steps that build up your own, your higher self-esteem, your ego. And that means you have to take, you have to come to the conclusion that you have to take the steps that are going to earn you what you deserve, and not do what the, what you think that, the, you know, the church wants you to do. I just got to get off the air real quick, Ken. I'm sorry we have to finish, but.
No, no, thank you.
Because this was good. Yeah, sure. I just want to mention to people out there that we're on the air 6 nights a week, every night except Saturday night, and 3 of those nights are special guest shows, which is what we're having tomorrow. Lynn Shiner from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, is the director of the Office of Victim Services. She herself is a crime and abuse victim. She lost her 2 children and wrote a book about it, Stabbed in the Heart. And she's going to be our special guest tomorrow night. She's actually in charge of the Victims Compensation Assistance Program for the state of Pennsylvania as well. And she's a wonderful guest. So I hope you will join us tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific, for another edition of our show, this one called Stop Child Abuse Now. And this is Bill thanking everyone who is on the show tonight and saying, may God bless you, God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Blog Talk Radio.